This is Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.
Hello and welcome to Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast. I am Oliver Kemp and I'm with my co-host Paul Francis, the Kames political editor. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing good, thanks, Ollie.
Good. Just a quick apologies to anyone who's listening. I am pretty ill today, so I sound a bit coldy, and if I cough, I'm sorry.
I might cough in sympathy as well.
There you go. Well, that'd be nice.
Down to biscuit eating before the podcast.
Brisket eating as well.
Brisket eating.
That's very posh. Just eats brisket up in the editing room. Great. Two ill co-hosts. That's good, isn't it? So there's quite a few things to talk about today, but safe to say it's generally a bit of a quiet week on the political front.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you sort of hesitate to call things weeks as quiet ones, but just genuinely there are sometimes weeks when, you know, there's stuff happening, but it's not major headline-grabbing stuff. So this is one of those weeks where there's kind of a smorgasbord of kind of some interesting issues.
Mm. I mean, you say headline writing maybe not as good, but is Big Ben being bonged a waste of money is a pretty good headline.
Yes, and you wonder whether it's got so much coverage just because newspaper subs are delighting in these alliterative headlines full of bees. Which could mean something else, but
yeah.
Yes.
So this is obviously the idea that we could there could be a sort of commemorative bong of Big Ben whilst it's still under maintenance to mark Brexit. That's right, isn't it?
That's right. Yes. Mm. Yeah. And it's caused a bit of a stir for some reason.
Well, because it could cost £500,000.
Well, this is where you try and untangle the fiction from the facts. Now, Prime Minister Boris Johnson apparently came out with a statement saying that it would cost £500,000 to get Big Ben to bong on July the 31st. Mm. That proved no one seemed to know where that figure came from, but it led the well-known Brexiteer MP Marc Francois to launch a kind of crowdfunding campaign in order to raise the money to get Big Ben to strike just at the moment that we leave the EU, in a kind of symbolic kind of gesture. And it's caused a bit of a stir with the Brexit Party saying that the government's too embarrassed to celebrate the departure from the European Union. So it's all gone a bit weird in one of those stories, which not terribly much substance to it, but has got a lot of airspace and a lot of time in the newspapers.
I mean, £500,000's a lot of money if that genuinely is how much it would cost. But yes. I mean, you know, Big Ben's already there. There's already a bong there, isn't there?
Well, there is. This whole situation has been complicated by the fact that Big Ben is under kind of renovation and refurbishment. So the backup plan is to bring in some heavy-duty speakers and relay the chimes, a recording of the chimes, which is not really the same as having Big Ben bong itself, but yeah, is kind of the fallback position. Now, you know, obviously there's a lot of people who think that we should mark our departure from the European Union by doing something. And there's equally a lot of people who think, well, I can think of better ways to spend £500,000. And in fact, we had one of our guests on the latest Paul on Politics show this week was a prospective parliamentary candidate in Kent for the Brexit Party, Evie Martin. And she said, quite surprisingly in some ways, that she felt it was a complete waste of time and money and it would be better spent on giving to food banks, for example.
Which is hard to argue, to be honest.
It is hard to argue, but because we're scrupulously neutral in these things, Ollie, we have to say that's one side of the argument.
Of course. But, you know, if it is £500,000, that would be a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
That's more than fireworks displays are spent on. You know, that's quite a significant amount of money.
There's a lot of newly qualified teachers you could appoint for schools, you know, social workers, etc., etc. So, yeah, but the argument goes on, and I think this is simply the fact that the Brexit Party wants to keep itself on the agenda by going down this particular road in terms of saying that the country has to have something which marks our departure from the European Union.
Quite a short road with like a single track road that leads to a cul-de-sac, really, isn't it? Well, there's not really much places you can go with that. I don't know.
If I was devoted to the cause of Brexit, I suppose I might be inclined to go and stand outside Parliament at midnight on July 31st. But I probably wouldn't.
Absolutely. Talking Points, Ken's politics podcast. We usually do the jargon at the end of the episode.
Yeah,
but,
we do.
But one of our topics today kind of feels like we may as well do it early on, because we need to talk about DCOs. So I need to say, Paul, what on earth is a DCO?
Well, I'll tell you what a DCO is. It's a development consent order, and it's something which developers sometimes apply for large-scale infrastructure projects. I hate saying large-scale infrastructure projects because that in itself is a bit of jargon.
Yeah, that sounds jargony.
And the background to us talking about a DCO is this latest development on the story of Manston Airport in Thanet.
Which has been like an epic story from the beginning, hasn't it? Well, we seem to hear a lot about Manston Airport and nothing particularly seems to change there.
Yeah, that's right. There's a long history associated with the plans to try and restore the aviation airfield to a working airport. And a quick bit of background, there's been an attempt by a consortium called River Oak Partnerships to do just that. They want to reopen the airport as a cargo aviation hub. So I've used two banned words, hub and infrastructure, already.
A bumper episode.
And had to go through this process of applying for a development consent order. And there was a big inquiry into the development consent order. Both sides in the argument, those who want it to be an airport, so those who don't want it to be an airport, gave lots of evidence at the public inquiry. And we were anticipating a decision sort of now, basically, but there was an announcement on Friday that the government was delaying it for a further 4 months to take into account fresh representations.
So, I mean, this seems to not be an issue happening in one place. These DCOs seem to be happening all over the place, because we also have the Lower Thames Crossing, which has been a particularly contentious DCO. There you go, I'm using my inverted...
Well, what's interesting about the DCO for the Dartford Crossing is they haven't actually even got as far as submitting a formal request for a DCO, because they had so much... response to the initial consultation on the proposed new route of the Dartford Crossing, that it's taken them much longer to get through it. So they haven't even started applying for a DCO. So that just to give you an indication that it's not unique and can and has happened in other big projects.
I mean, there was like a total of almost 29,000 responses to that public consultation on the Lower Thames. So there's a significant amount of discussion, I guess, that has to be had over the...
Yeah, I mean, if you have a DCO and there's a planning inquiry, expect to get lots of representations and lots of people submitting evidence and lots of arguments going on between the two sides, and that's precisely what happened in the case of the Manston DCO. However, there was an awful lot of discussion that went on in the inquiry, which was examining the DCO application. And some people are sort of questioning why there has to be a fresh delay and why there needs to be another period of time when for the DCO to be considered. The government's being a bit tight-lipped about this, not really saying what specifically it's got in mind in terms of why it regards an extension as necessary.
Isn't it a good thing, though, that there are being lots of discussions had over these large-scale projects? Because we need to make the right decision on them going forward. So is it a good thing that things are being taken into consideration and that decision's taking a bit of time?
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue against that. I mean, but the reality is that DCOs were kind of are part of the planning process, which is designed to speed up decision makings on kind of important infrastructure projects. There we go again. I've said it again.
Oh dear, we need a Big Ben bomb.
I'll have to pay the fine for using jargon.
It's
myself.
A high fine as well. Yeah. So
especially for infrastructure and especially for hubs.
Yeah.
But back to the point you were making. There's always been lots of concerns that some of these big projects, like Terminal 5 at Heathrow, just have taken so long to get through the process that. That it's almost as if they kind of I'll start that again. It's almost too long, and by the time a decision is reached, the circumstances of the application might have changed, or the need for what is planned has changed. So DCOs are designed to speed up the process, but they can be subject to delays themselves, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so it could be a bit too much more of bureaucracy, layers of bureaucracy, yes, stopping things from getting through. Yeah. And speaking, I mean, of Manston, this is generally related, but lorry parks in Kent, of which Manston could have been one.
Well, it still could be one, yes,
of course. Yeah. So I know that Natalie Elphick has spoken out, the Dover and Deal MP, about the fact that we don't have any lorry parks in Kent.
No, this is another issue which has got a long backstory, but I'll start in 2015.
Please do.
Podcast might last a bit longer than we anticipated. But basically, the government bowed to pressure to come up with something to deal with the adverse consequences of Operation Stack. That was the predecessor kind of traffic management scheme to Operation Brock, which involved closing the M20, and closing the M20 is not surprisingly and unsurprisingly popular with many people.
No, not that surprising, that information.
So when he was Chancellor, Gordon Brown, I've got a bad mistake there, George Osborne, when he was Chancellor, announced there'd be £250 million to invest in and build a permanent lorry park somewhere in Kent. 5 years on, how far do you think we are down the road, Ollie?
Not too far, I should imagine.
No, it's kind of stalled. It's been in limbo. The site they chose, they had to abandon because of this legal challenge over the environmental impact. Chris Grayling, the then Transport Secretary, said that the Department of Transport would identify sites in 2018, go out to public consultation in 2019, and neither of those two things have happened. So there's an attempt, I get the sense that there's a concerted political attempt here going on in Kent to kind of renew the pressure on the government to sort this out, because with Operation Brock disappearing, there's still the sort of slight possibility that Operation Stack could be on the comeback trail.
Mm.
Let's put it like that.
And this is the thing, we're fast approaching Brexit. We haven't had anything sorted out for this. Operation Brock's going. TAP is always employed, which is another traffic management measure for lorries around Dover. On the, I think it's in the A256, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so on that big steep hill going down to the port.
Yeah, so there are measures in place. But in theory, you know, if there's a lot of congestion happening post-Brexit and there are no lorry parks, we're going to be in a position where there's an urgent need of it and there's nothing in place.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and the government is kind of aware of this. And I was trying to find out from the Department for Transport this week what part whether there would be some version of Operation Stack as the kind of contingency measure. And they were a bit reluctant to sort of answer specifically, said that it was possibly part of a package of measures, including Dover TAP, but Operation Stack, they said, would only come back as a last resort. So they're definitely downplaying the possibility that we could have to see Operation Stack enforced at some point, if, you know, not because of Brexit, but, you know, if there's bad weather causing delays crossing the Channel, French industrial action, etc., then there may be a need to bring it back in some sort of modified fashion.
Because I think there may be, and you know, I may be wrong about this, but there may be a misconception that, and we've spoke about this on episodes before, that as the day we leave Brexit, there'll be lorries queuing up for miles on end approaching Dover, which is very unlikely to happen.
It is unlikely to happen, and I think it's unlikely to happen in the next 10-11 months, because all the existing arrangements stay in place until the UK has negotiated the terms of various deals and decided what arrangements need to be in place for customs checks and border checks. So there's no immediate threat, but it's worth remembering that, you know, Operation Stack has been triggered for reasons other than Brexit. It's not, you know, it's come into play because of, you know, as we say, possible delays caused by bad weather. Nothing really to do with Brexit.
This is Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.
So there's another thing that we talked about last week, Paul, which is Labour leadership. which is going to be one of the, I think one of the talking points we probably return to over the coming months, because it is going to define the makeup of the next sort of era of the Labour Party, I suppose.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and it's you know, quite an interesting contest, and one of the most notable events so far has been a confession by Jess Phillips that she's finding the hustings skills that are needed are not quite in her own skill set.
Yeah, this came off the Saturday evening hustings in Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yes.
And there were, I had a little look on social media, and there was a fair bit of criticism that was laid across a lot of the people that were involved in the hustings in the first place, that there was a bit of sloganeering, all felt a little bit one note.
Yeah, and that tends to happen with leadership contests. The contenders in the race are very reluctant to put a foot wrong, and that does tend to lead to tonally kind of very safe kind of spinning of their core messages, and with not terribly much in terms of specifics. So Jess Phillips has sort of confessed that she finds his approach to the kind of the contest not sort of something that she's good at. So she's going for the unspun kind of version of trying to get her kind of foot through the door, basically.
Which in theory could work, because it's a different approach, right?
It is, and you know, one of the things that politicians are often kind of criticised for is not talking the same language as the people they aspire to represent, and are kind of course trapped in this fear. Of this vortex of fear that, you know, a misspoken statement or some kind of confusion over policy will cost them their place in the race. I don't think Jess Phillips is one of the leading contenders anyway, but it is, part of me thinks it's actually quite refreshing to see a politician say, well, you know, we're all trying to avoid making mistakes, and it's leading to a very dull contest, so I'm just going to speak my mind.
Isn't it also true at this point that whoever wins this contest is probably not going to be near Downing Street at any point anyway?
Well, I think that is the reality in terms of where we are at the moment. You never know what might happen over the next year, of course, but I think as things stand, what Labour is looking for is someone who can steady the ship, basically, and maybe be a safer pair of hands than it was under Mr. Corbyn.
Absolutely. And another candidate I think is interesting to talk about is Rebecca Long-Bailey, who's been endorsed as the Momentum candidate.
Yes.
I mean, what is it about her that might appeal to that hard left wing of the Labour Party, that section of Momentum supporters? And might that actually damage her prospects with regular Labour voters who aren't part of Momentum?
Yeah, I mean, the key challenge that Labour's got is trying to recover the kind of middle ground that it had when Tony Blair was Prime Minister. And, you know, going down that kind of that particular left-hand drive, as it were,
left-hand drive.
Oh, yes.
That's new, I like that.
Going down that particular path is something which is not necessarily going to attract more moderate supporters. I mean, to be fair to Rebecca Long-Bailey, she has said she's not going to follow in Corbyn's footsteps to, you know, in every single fashion. But she, as you rightly say, she's definitely the pick of the left wing of the party.
And this is why I suppose that Keir Starmer's being doubted by a lot of people as a good potential leader, because he is seen as more moderate centre.
Yes, but the route to power involves making sure that you pick up enough support in that kind of constituency, because if you don't, and we've said this countless times in Kent, you can't get the keys to Downing Street without winning certain seats in Kent. And, you know, if you look at what happened in the December election, Labour's vote kind of went into freefall, basically, in some of these constituencies. So they're not starting from the new leader won't be starting from a particular position in which, you know, Labour only narrowly lost certain seats in Kent. They got smashed in Kent, basically.
Yeah, one MP.
and 1MP, a kind of atypical constituency. You know, Canterbury is not like the three constituencies in the Medway towns.
Exactly. Well, we'll be following that, obviously, with interest. We will be back next week with more political stories. There might be more going on locally. We obviously talk about the national picture as usual.
And I'll be getting my money out to put in the jargon fine jar.
You will. You will. And hopefully I'll not be trying not to splutter across our conversation next week.
You did very well.
Thank you very much. See you, everyone, next week. Talking Points, Kent's Politics Podcast.